is the one song. It is the one song that is going to juice up every naval aviator and most every kid and every adult that's a kid at heart, and that is that song from that movie. And the reason we play it is because we have a former naval aviator with us, Rear Admiral Kyle Kozad, retired. He is the president of the Naval Aviation Museum Foundation. He was the two-star in residence as the head of NETSI when he was on the base, and now he works for the museum. He joins us now by phone. Admiral, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Andrew, I've been waiting for this call for 2.5 years. It's great to be here today.
Oh, man. And, you know, when the news came out yesterday that this was happening, it's funny, okay? So I've been waiting for this forever, too, and yet I had almost gotten excited and then disappointed and excited and disappointed so many times and felt like we were just up against the Navy so relentlessly, like, I guess it's just always going to be this way. I don't want to get my hopes up again like Charlie Brown with the football. And then all of a sudden, it's happening. This is real. The base is going to be back open for visitors 7 days a week come middle of this month, right?
Yeah. So, had a chance to sit down with Skipper Shashadi the other day and his team, and you know they're approaching this as a phased opening. So the Undersecretary of the Navy signed the document that allows this waiver to happen, and it'll take us really back to kind of pre-2019 procedures. But they'll be open, you know, we'll be completely open for 4 days a week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the 4th through the 7th of May, then the 11th through the 14th of May. And I believe the date that he's advertising is come one, come all on the 17th of May, and that'll be a Blue Angel practice day, an autograph session in the atrium. So, I mean, gosh, you couldn't write a script that's more exciting than that.
No, it's fantastic. You know, so many times we say it, but it's so true. You don't know what you've got till it's gone. And this has been painful for the community. It has been painful for the base. I know they want the public there. That relationship has been so tight historically. It's been extraordinarily painful for you, as for the museum, for Sterls, for the lighthouse. Can you maybe just tell people what it's been like and what the impact was to you in terms of visitors and revenue for the museum because of this lack of public access?
Yeah, well, so, you know, I took over almost 30 months ago, 2.5 years ago, and this is all I've known. So, you know, with the exception of a couple of public access days, you know, I come in and I see 100 people in an empty parking lot, and, you know, it's easy to get trapped in the mindset that, hey, this is how it is. But, you know, in 2019, we had gone from 724,000 visitors to, you know, just over 200,000 visitors with the restriction on, you know, Department of Defense ID card holders only. And that, for us, you know, we live on revenue that comes from simulators and movies and folks enjoying themselves and going to the store. So that's a loss of anywhere from, you know, $4 to $5 million. Now, I say that, you know, don't feel sorry for us, because, you know, we have worked our tails off to, you know, go out and hit corporate sponsors. We had a $5 million gift from a great friend of the Museum Foundation. And so that's allowed us to, you know, not just sit in the corner and feel sorry for ourselves, but, you know, do things that are going to make this museum so much better when folks walk in the door later this month. So we're very, very fortunate. We've always had support. We've had, you know, the 20,000 signatures, you know, from folks in the petition last fall. And there's good news because folks, guess what? People listened to what you said. And as a result of that, this month we're opening.
No, it's fantastic news. And it's really, you know, I know, and even Congressman Gates made a comment about this the other day in the House Armed Services Committee comments with Secretary Del Toro, where, you know, he said, look, most people view this as a tourism thing, as a, you know, something that they can be educated by, something that they can take their friends and relatives to town when it's raining or when it's shining, whatever. And obviously the Blue Angels practice to enjoy as a spectator. But there is a recruiting and educational element of this, you know, for service members and future service members, right?
You're absolutely right. And, you know, I lived the recruiting world when I was at NETSI several years ago. But, you know, there's so much value. And, you know, right now with Department of Defense families only, you know, those kids understand the military. They get it. But it's these families that come in. And, you know, I've got a story about a family that came in from Pittsburgh, you know, three little kids, junior high down to elementary school. And they couldn't even spell naval aviation. But by the time that we, you know, I had lunch with him, you know, they walked away. They were changed. And, you know, this young man, I got an email from his mother the other day. You know, he wants to go to the Naval Academy and fly Navy jets. So, you know, that's the perfect story of what an impact a museum like this, a Blue Angel practice, you know, can have on somebody who just, you know, doesn't otherwise know or hasn't been otherwise exposed.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And again, as Matt said the other day in the hearing, this isn't going to solve all of the recruiting issues for the services, but it's one piece of the puzzle. And it's just to be able to, you know, have a kid who's vacationing here in town with his family be able to go watch the Blue Angels, not on beach show or homecoming show weekend, but because it's a practice all throughout the season. That's an invaluable recruiting asset and patriotism and educational asset that, you can't put a value on that, which is why it's been so frustrating that people don't have access to that. Talking to Rear Admiral, retired Admiral Kozad, president of the Naval Aviation Museum Foundation. I want to give you a second to brag about some folks, because there have been a lot of people involved in this effort and a lot of people who have made a key difference. And I know there's always that, you know, person you leave out in the list of people that you include, but who do you want people to know were working their tails off to make this happen?
Yeah, and you're right. There's always risk there, but, you know, I'll just shoot from the top of my head. I've got a couple board members, retired four-star admirals, Bill Moran and Harry Harris, who were really invaluable in just gaining access and talking a lot with the Secretary of the Navy. You know, Senator Broxson's been an incredible local asset, as well as Matt Gaetz. I mean, his question, and I know SecNav knew this because he had a meeting a couple weeks ago, but, you know, we were right on the edge of getting that document signed, you know, during his last testimony, and kind of that spurred a lot of the conversation. But, you know, locally, I got to say thanks to Tim Kinsella, the former Bay CO, and then, Terry Shishetti, the current CO. They have, I mean, lived this journey with us every single day, looking for a way to yes, and we're finally there. And you know, the museum director, Sterls Gilliam, and his staff. And then, you know, I can't pay enough thanks to my staff that's been, you know, we haven't been able to do our entire job because we haven't had people here. So when I gave them the news yesterday, there were actually some tears in people's eyes. So we're excited to do this. And, you know, gosh, can't wait for that first day to actually get here.
No, it's absolutely fantastic. One question I had, sort of a nuts and bolts kind of question, is I know cost had been an issue, or at least that was my perception, is that, you know, part of it was getting the Navy to accept the waiver for, you know, public access, kind of the ongoing temporary waiver that we used to have for forever. Part of the issue, as I understood it, was, you know, cost and staffing. The back gate, it's not free to put people there. And when you have the public on base, you have to have a little bit increased staffing. Do you know who's funding that? Is that something that is like, are you guys funding that? Is the Navy funding that? Where is that kind of, you know, functionality stuff coming from?
Yeah, so to the best of my knowledge, the Navy's going to, you know, fund, and this was, you know, without question, the lowest cost solution that could be put into place. And,
right.
And you know, I wouldn't view this the permanent temporary final. We're still going to go after, you know, some other things that are a little more, you know, I'll call them Navy proof, so that we're not as susceptible to, you know, waivers being revoked or whatever. But, you know, you're right. It does come with some additional people. It's a modest number, and some interim access checkpoints, so gate guards that will prevent the general public from going into the base housing areas, the sensitive schoolhouses, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, there is some cost. The Navy's going to bear those costs. And again, for that, you know, we are the Navy's museum, the Navy's National Aviation Museum. So they're going to bear that cost, and they recognize the value to that.
And I know how you think. I heard it in what you said just a minute ago. I know that you're a guy who's like, well, that's fantastic. What's next? You know, and so the what's next is, you know, the long-term plan. And I know you'll get right to work on, and have been ongoing working on that. That's been a big sticking point, is what would the shape of that long-term plan. But what I hear from you is basically a commitment that this is great, good to have this back, but we already saw how this can go away under the wrong circumstances, and we really do need a better solution for everybody. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely fair to say. You know, when I got to the foundation, you know, the National Flight Academy was on life support. We didn't have base access. Well, I've checked those two blocks in 2.5 years, so I got to find something else to keep me busy.
Absolutely, and I know you will. It's just, it is such a relief day. It's going to be so great when the 17th comes and people can watch the Blue Angels again. And, you know, there's probably going to be minor hiccups along the way. That's perfectly fine. That's to be expected. That's why they've done it this way, this gradual progression. Rear Admiral Kozad, thank you so much for what you have been doing, for diligently communicating with us and keeping us up to speed on what's been happening, even the things that didn't pan out, and, you know, for overseeing this process and caretaking a wonderful museum. You know, Stirl's does such a great job as well. But, sir, thanks for the time as always. We'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right, Andrew. We look forward to seeing everybody out there. And go online, because we've got new exhibits. We've got, you know, new opportunities for folks to skip the line. You can buy tickets to the attractions, to movies online. So get out there, do that, and we look forward to shaking everybody's hands as they walk back into their museum here in a few weeks.